William Howard Taft, the only American ever to serve both as President of the United States and Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, noted that presidents come and go, but the Supreme Court goes on forever. That longevity has a lot to do with the lasting influence of important court rulings, and a little to do with the longevity of court cases that may take a decade or more to reach the highest bench in the land. Welcome to Copyright Clearance and his podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. Attorneys representing two high-profile lawsuits from the book world may soon climb the famous stone steps on First Street. The Authors Guild has appealed to the Supreme Court in its fight with Google over book scanning. And Apple likewise hopes the nine justices will hear its price-fixing case. For all the legal details, we turn to Andrew Albany, senior writer at Publishers Weekly, for his appearance every Friday on Beyond the Book. And Andrew, welcome back and Happy New Year to our show.
Hey there, Chris, and Happy New Year to you.
All right. Well, listen, Happy New Year as well to everyone listening. And, well, it is the new year. We've been off for a couple of weeks, so we need to catch up on some news that goes beyond the legal world, although it touches on it in an interesting way, and that is with the news we've been expecting for some time regarding self-publishing service provider Author Solutions. After defeating its own class action lawsuit last year, something we talked about a fair bit on this podcast, Author Solutions has been sold by its parent company, Penguin Random House. So tell us more.
That's right. I think the long-expected other shoe is finally dropped on Author Solutions, which, as you point out, escaped a high-profile class action suit against them last year, a suit that was filed by angry customers of the company that accused them of fraudulent practices. So one thing I will note about the sale of Author Solutions is that it was probably not a result of the lawsuit, because the speculation has long been that Author Solutions was always going to be divested once its parent company, Penguin, merged with Random House. And back in 2012, that's when the merger, I believe, was initiated. So I think it was always unclear how Author Solutions was going to fit into this new sort of Penguin Random House mega publisher's plans. But one thing the lawsuit likely did was force Penguin Random House to hang on to Author Solutions longer than they wanted to, because obviously I think it's hard to sell a company when that company is facing a class action suit from their own customers. So you can read all the details about the Author Solutions sale on the PW site. There's a story up there now, such as they are, I should add, because no details were really released other than the buyer, which is a private equity group called the Najafi Group, which may ring a bell for some listeners, because that's the same group that made an offer to buy a bunch of the Borders stores during the Borders bankruptcy years ago. For now, the same management team is going to remain in place at Author Solutions, helmed by Andrew Phillips. So, you know, truly a new beginning this year, this new year for Author Solutions, I should say. And, you know, honestly, given the complaints against them, they could probably use a new beginning.
Well, indeed. And, you know, they were happy to get out of a court case regarding that class action lawsuit. The Authors Guild has been sticking with its court case now for more than 10 years. And we've learned that they are indeed taking their case against Google to the Supreme Court, or at least asking the Supreme Court to take the case. Tell us more.
Yeah, so following its most recent appeals court loss in October, the Authors Guild is making good on its vow to petition the Supreme Court to review the long-running Google book scanning case. They made their filing on New Year's Eve, December 31st. In a statement, Mary Rasenberger, who is the executive director of the Authors Guild and also herself a copyright attorney, we should note, said that the case represents an important opportunity for the Supreme Court to clarify fair use for the digital age, and she noted that the Supreme Court has actually not heard a fair use case in over 20 years. And unfortunately, they're probably not going to hear this one either. Although I will say that this case probably has a better chance of being heard than Apple and its price-fixing case, which is also pending before the Supreme Court. The Guild brief cites numerous conflicts between the Second Circuit's ruling and other fair use decisions, and that's something it has going for it. And even though I don't find those precedents and those conflicts that it cites to ring necessarily true, as a non-lawyer that is, there are significant legal questions that I could see the court wanting to draw in. You know, the biggest question, I think, which the publishers and the authors have been loudly talking about over the past few years, is what they see as a judicial expansion of what it means to make a transformative use. In its brief, Authors Guild attorneys say the Second Circuit's decision basically empowers judges to approve any reuse of a copyrighted work that those judges deem socially beneficial. You know, and That's an interesting argument, but, you know, I say, well, of course it does, because, you know, that's exactly how the law has always worked. Judges always get to decide whether or not something is a fair use or not. But I think the case is probably more of a long shot because, well, this bar hasn't really been close. In his lower court decision, Judge Denny Chin emphatically found that Google scanning was fair use, as did Judge Harold Baer a year earlier in the Authors Guild's parallel case against the HathiTrust. Those, of course, are Google's library scanning partners. And, you know, both of those opinions were upheld unanimously on appeal. So in all, that's eight judges that have sided and sided strongly with Google and no one for the Authors Guild yet. You know, I'd also add there's really no harm to show here in this case. You know, the threat of being hacked at Google has not been compelling to the judges and is probably not enough to shut down a project like this anyway. And the idea that the authors might somehow license their books for indexing, I think is pretty clearly an overreach too. But I will offer this much to the Guild. Underlying its claim, which is really well argued by Paul Smith, who is a fantastic attorney, a fantastic copyright attorney, the idea is this idea that writers should be paid for their use of their work online. And I don't disagree with that. But how that happens, I think, is expressly the domain of Congress and really not part of this particular lawsuit, even though the Authors Guild would like to believe otherwise. So in the coming weeks, we'll be looking for amicus briefs and, of course, Google's reply brief. So at least through the spring, this decade-long Google book litigation still has life.
Right. Well, also knocking at the door of the Supreme Court is Apple. And we have heard recently from the Department of Justice, which doesn't want to see it let in. And they're asking the High Court not to take the appeal of the price fixing case. Tell us more where that case stands. And the important thing for our listeners is whether consumers might see refunds in their ebook accounts this year, 2016.
Yeah, well, you know, that's right. In an opposition brief it filed just before Christmas on December 23rd, the DOJ basically argued that Apple's appeal and its ebook price fixing case is based on a fundamental misrepresentation of the facts. You know, as our listeners will recall, Apple and its supporters have argued that the lower courts blundered when they held Apple liable for a per se violation of antitrust laws. That is, a per se case is where the restraint imposed on trade is so obviously outside the law that it is condemned without evaluating other market factors, such as a dominant force like Amazon monopolizing the market. Apple argues that because it is a vertical player, that precedent demands that it be evaluated under the more expansive rule of reason standard, which Apple says would reveal its conduct to be pro-competitive. DOJ attorneys, however, had a message in their brief to the Supreme Court. Don't believe it. They argued that Apple's appeal relies on a sanitized version of the facts. That's their words. And they pointed out to the court that the case is not at all about Apple's vertical contracts or its vertical relationship to the publishers, but rather the horizontal agreement that Apple organized among the publishers to raise ebook prices, which DOJ attorneys call the archetypical example of a per se unlawful restraint on trade. You know, Apple does not dispute that the publishers engaged in a horizontal price fixing conspiracy that was properly found to be worthy of a per se condemnation, or at least so the DOJ argues. And the DOJ also says that the law is perfectly clear that a vertically related firm that joins a horizontal conspiracy is liable to the same extent as its co-conspirators.
Right. Well, you're a pretty experienced handicapper, Andrew Albanese, when it comes to these kinds of cases. And I guess it's your view that Apple faces pretty long odds.
That is my view, yes, but I'm going to wimp out here and put the odds at 50-50. You know, maybe they take it, maybe they don't. And I'll say that if the Supreme Court does want to take the chance and further clarify whether the per se rules apply, then it's probably going to take the case. If it sees this case for what it is, I believe, it will not. And that's because this really is not a complicated case as much as Apple has tried to portray it as such. And in their brief, the DOJ attorneys really hit all the right notes, I think. You know, basically, they say that Apple was not entitled to enter the ebook market by organizing a price-fixing conspiracy among all the publishers so it could level the playing field. And its vertical contracts, which were all perfectly legal according to both lower court decisions, are not at issue here, nor is the fact that the ebook market was sort of brand new, still sort of the Wild West, as it were. The evidence shows that, and I'll quote from the DOJ brief here, let me find that, Apple was not a hapless actor that unwittingly became enmeshed with some form of alleged collusion, the DOJ points out. But in fact, they orchestrated the publisher's conspiracy and they actively relied on collusion to achieve its business ends. So, you know, some commentators have placed a lot of weight on one judge's dissent in the appeals court case, which is a little odd, I think. But the circuit split that was addressed in that dissent is pretty weak, lawyers tell me. And the evidence against Apple is pretty voluminous and pretty strong. So to quote another lawyer that I actually had dinner with this week, it would really take a clerk in the cert pool at the Supreme Court to really sort of be feeling his oats, his or her oats, I should say, to make a case that this is something the Supreme Court should take on. But that said, if the court does take it, watch out, because that can only mean that at least four of the judges there are ready to make some new law.
Well, you know, and finally, this week, we get to welcome you to our own hometown. You're in the same city with me, not New York or Frankfurt or London even. It's my hometown of Boston. Everyone knows I'm a Bostonian. It's hard to tell. And you're here for the ALA midwinter meeting, a meeting I'm sure you're looking forward to, and one I'm hearing you will be talking to later this weekend on Sunday morning.
That's right. So I'm wicked psyched to be in Boston, and it's a great city. Always love coming here, even in January, though maybe not last January, I understand. And I'm really sort of delighted to be at what promises to be a very lively ALA meeting. You can read all about the highlights of the meeting on the PW website. We also have some program picks up there if you want to go up and take a look at some of the things that our contributors are pointing out. And among the highlights I'll briefly point out here is, of course, the Children's Media Awards, which is the new Barry and the Caldecott. And for the first time, the Carnegie Medals, which is the ALA's Adult Fiction Awards, are going to be awarded at the midwinter meeting. That's going to be on Sunday night at 5 o'clock. Those meetings will be announced. So those awards have previously been given in June at the ALA annual meeting, but that was problematic, as you might expect, because that meant that the award for the best book of 2015, for example, wasn't going to be honored until 7 months into 2016, which really, you know, doesn't make a lot of sense. So this new schedule allows the Carnegie Medals to be much more current, and it also allows them to latch on to the popularity of the Newbery and the Caldecott Medals, which are widely acknowledged as the gold standard in book awards for kids. And as you mentioned, of course, on Sunday morning, I'll be giving a talk on what's going on with ebooks. And that's actually the focus of a recent piece I did with my colleague Calvin Reed. And that's up now. It was in the January 4th issue of PW, and it's on the web for our subscribers. And in a nutshell, I'll just say that we have indeed hit a plateau for ebooks, as we've discussed on the show recently. And in fact, we're starting to decline a little bit here. But while ebooks are sort of pausing to catch their breath, the race to the digital future is still going on. And on the PW site on Monday, you can read all about the challenges that I see and the opportunities that lie ahead for ebooks and what I plan to tell librarians in Boston this weekend, I should say. And also you can read all of our coverage from ALA Midwinter. That's next week on the PW website.
All right. Well, indeed. Welcome again to Boston. We'll see you down at the Seaport. And thanks, as always, for joining us on Beyond the Book.
My pleasure, as always.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as images, movies, and television shows. You can follow us on Twitter, find Beyond the Book on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at our website, beyondthebook.com. Our engineer and co-producer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.